Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. How you doing on this very unusual week in the UK? Very sad time for the nation. Maybe you're one of the people listening to this as you stand in the queue. The queue, what an incredible British thing that is. People queuing politely for days sometimes. But I really hope if you are making the journey to London, I hope that goes smoothly for you. I think London's going to be unbelievably busy this weekend for sure. Whatever has been happening for you this week, I really hope you feel what's the word? I suppose balanced. We had a meet up in the in our sober club group last week, and it's really interesting how, you know, really big emotional things like this that affect everybody, how it can trigger so much of our own personal stuff as well. And several sober club members were saying that they were feeling really unsettled, really chaotic, and the Queen's death reminded them, brought back all the same feelings, all the memories of losing their parents or losing loved ones. And of course, you know, there are people whose own mothers and family members died on that same day. Very difficult, so tricky when, you know, you have your personal stuff and then the wider picture. It's a very difficult time, and I think it can just feel very shaky when there's this kind of mood in the nation. It can really feel shaky, and also, of course, as I said last week, it can be a trigger for drinking for so many people. One of our sober club members was saying that she feels really unsettled. You know, kids left home, empty nest. I may have mentioned this last week, but you know, if you're not careful in that scenario, you can head straight back down that slippery slope, because our unconscious mind says, "Oh, I know what we do when we feel a bit unsettled, or when we feel like we're not needed, or when we feel as though, you know, there's nothing really special to look forward to. I know what we do. We drink. We numb it out." And we have to work really hard to reframe those kind of unconscious thoughts all the time. As Susan from Hola Sober was saying last week, that alcohol really is a beast. Let's not sugarcoat it. It really is a beast. And we do have to do the work to make sure that we stay connected, that we put the work in, that we constantly notice our thoughts, that we take a bit of time out to look at what's important for us. We have to do all of that work. So if we don't, we get straight back down that slippery slope. So yeah, it's really worth taking some time to just get back in touch with what's really important for you. And of course, connection is massively important in all that. I had a great response to the podcast, by the way. If you haven't listened to last week's with Susan, have a listen and have a look at the fabulous mag, the free mag, Hola Sober. I've got an article in there. All the links are in my show notes for the Alcohol Free Life podcast. What an amazing, inspirational woman. Incredible. So is today's guest. I've got an interview that I recorded some time ago. So again, there's, just in case you're thinking, you know, there's no reference to anything that's going on, that's because it was recorded some time ago with Lisa May Bennett, who's the author of My Unfurling, Emerging from the Grip of Anxiety, Self-Doubt and Drinking. What a great title that really sums up all those emotions, doesn't it? But before we do that, I'm sure you know that one of my big things, if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, you're going to hear me say a lot: keep the ritual, change the ingredients. What I mean by that is, you know, as adults, we seek pleasure. We want a lovely drink and a lovely glass sometimes. And there's nothing wrong with that. We just don't need it to be poison, right? So keep the ritual, but change the ingredients. Make sure you've got a lovely glass. And the glass is important, by the way. And make sure that your unconscious mind knows, okay, I'm not going to have a drink that's really nice and really good for me, and I'm going to have a social occasion or whatever it might be. Commiserations, celebrations, as you know. So, of course, I love seeking out all the best alcohol-free products, and of course the choice is amazing now. And one of the drinks that I came across fairly early on in my sobriety was Three Spirit. And if you haven't tried Three Spirit, oh man, it's unique. It really is unique. It's an amazing drink. So I was very excited to find out that Three Spirit now have Blurred Vines, an alcoholic wine, but with a difference. So I thought this would be hard for me to describe, you know, really properly describe it to you. So let's get the main man on the podcast. So the sound quality is not fantastic here, but I think we'll do okay. So here's Dash. I was just so excited to see details and info about this new brand and to, in fact, try it. I'm introducing you to Blurred Vines and so thrilled to be able to chat to Dash Lilly. Dash, how are you doing? I understand you're on a flight path somewhere or under
yeah,
one.
I'm near Kew Gardens, which is good for me because we're plant heads, but bad for audio because there is lots of planes.
Yeah, well, I can just about hear you. It's okay. Yeah, so I just really wanted to touch base because obviously, you know, I'm a very big fan of Three Spirit, an amazing, amazing brand, of which you're one of the co-founders. And obviously, this is a sort of new addition to your range. So just tell us a little bit about, maybe if you can, tell us a tiny bit about your background and how you got into all of this, and then we'll talk about the new drinks.
Sure. So, yeah, I got into the drinks world through coconut water. I started a coconut water brand called Coconut Face, and it was all about super high quality raw coconut water from Southeast Asia, just at the beginning of the coconut water kind of boom, and we had the best product. And I've developed more and more of an interest in functional ingredients, functional foods. I think coconut water is one of the original kind of, better for you drinks that came to market that was marketed as natural hydration, full of electrolytes, et cetera, and became a very big lifestyle product. And so since then, I've just learned as much as I can about interesting ingredients, especially functional ingredients that can do something positive for the body, for the mind, and brought all of that interest and know-how into creating Three Spirit drinks.
Great. And just remind us, for anyone who doesn't know, just remind us what Three Spirit drinks are.
Sure. So Three Spirit is a range of non-alcoholic alternatives to spirits and wines. We are proud that they are kind of, we make standalone drinks, liquids. They're not copycats of existing alcohol, but we try and recreate some of the benefits that alcohol can provide, aka things that can help you socially lubricate, if I may say so. Yeah. And so we try and create amazing quality flavors. We work with world-class bartenders, winemakers, plant scientists to try and deliver products, liquids that can really overwhelm you with in terms of taste and their effect, the feeling that they can provide.
And I was just going to say, I think you're absolutely right. Three Spirit are, they're not trying to be anything else, but they're really intense flavors. And I think when people first stop drinking, one of the things they tend to miss is that sort of almost that very intense flavor that they feel they get, from alcohol. And I know the many people have said, oh my goodness, I'm going to have a nightcap of Three Spirit and it hits the spot.
Yeah, exactly. We're really proud to be different, and potency is so important. Alcohol, especially spirits, let's be honest, they are potent liquids. They are strong. They are an acquired taste.
Yeah.
They will blow your head off. You need to learn how to use them or not use them. And so our spirits range was always designed to be potent, strong. Maybe you'd have to figure out if you like it or not over time. But certainly something that you sit and savor and cherish. And so many of our customers give such good feedback that it feels like a treat. It's something that they can look forward to at the end of the day, end of the night. It satisfies that urge for an alcoholic drink.
Yeah,
and that makes us so pleased. And the new range, Blurred Vines, is slightly different because it's all about trying to create very elegant liquids that you can drink more of, like wine. Wine you might drink half a bottle or share it with a few people, but you want to be able to maybe have more than one glass. And so that's what we've really focused on with the Blurred Finds range, is creating liquids that are a bit more gentle, you know, something for accompanying food. And, you know, really excited to see or to hear how you got on with them.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think I read that you said that, you know, a lot of the alcohol-free wines on the market, you know, I mean, certainly originally, they were really not good. I remember trying my first alcohol-free wine before I stopped drinking, but I tried one, you know, as you do, thinking I might have a day off. Didn't work out well. And it didn't work out well, partly because the alternative was just absolutely horrible. It was like some kind of old vinegar. It really was awful. Now, you know, a lot of the alcohol-free wines have got a lot better. But I know you've said that you know, it's not the easiest challenge, is it, to create an alcohol-free wine, in inverted commas?
No, it's really challenging, which is why good options are few and far between. And, you know, that's why we threw our hat in the ring, is we felt that what was out there when we were trying and doing our research, it just wasn't good enough. I wouldn't have chosen to drink it. So we thought, why don't we try and construct something? Why don't we try and create something that is worthy of your glass? And you're right, de-alkalized wines are improving all of the time. You know, the no and low movement is building all of the time, so people are investing more time and money into it. There's clearly a huge market and audience for non-alcoholic drinks that are good. But what I discovered and felt quite passionate about was, you know, most de-alkalized wines are cheap wine, you know, because you take a cheap wine and you put it through this process of de-alkalization, which really strips out most of the backbone of that liquid anyway. And then often you replace the alcohol with sugar and you put it in a bottle and you sell it. And it just felt like a product that wasn't really paying much respect to the drinker. So our approach is completely different. We like to start from scratch, reverse engineer what wine is in terms of its chemical characteristics, what makes it feel the way it feels on the palate, what gives it the texture, the mouthfeel is so important. And we look at using all kinds of different ingredients to bring complexity of flavor, not restricting ourselves to just using grape, for instance. It's like, why wouldn't you want a toolbox full of tools rather than just limiting yourself to a hammer? If you want to try and build something.
What other ingredients do you have then? Are you allowed to tell us, or is it all a secret?
No. We're all about the ingredients. We love to talk about our ingredients, tell our story through the ingredients. With Blurred Finds, we have two different products. There is a product called Spark, which is a sparkling rosé, and a product called Sharp, which is a kind of light, young, white wine impression. And Spark is full of red fruits, so you've got strawberries, red currants. We make a fermented base, so we actually ferment apricot and grape to create these funky wine aromatics, but using special yeasts that only produce very low levels of alcohol. So the final product is below 0.5% ABV, which is classified as non-alc. But then we also build the liquids with amazing cold brewed teas. And so in Spark, we use two different black teas, one from Malawi, one from Nepal. We use a green tea from China. We source with the most amazing tea company called the Rare Tea Company, who are unparalleled in their quality, their sustainable sourcing. They're just amazing. I'd recommend your listeners to look into them if they like tea.
Yeah, check that out, definitely.
So Spark is, you know, sparkling champagne consumption moment, something for sharing, celebrating. It's got natural caffeine in it, so it's going to give you a little buzz. It's got green tea extracts with L-theanine in it, which will give you this kind of calm, euphoric focus. So all of our drinks try and deliver a positive feeling and sensation, as well as deliciousness. And Sharp is lovely. It's made with fresh pressed English green gooseberries, really acidic and tart. And then we cold brew manuka leaves, which are grown in Cornwall. So the manuka plant is amazing. Most people will know manuka honey.
Yeah, manuka honey.
Antibacterial and immunity. But the leaves provide this incredible floral flavor. And we also use a plant called cosseret, which is part of the verbena family. African verbena comes from Ethiopia. And you just have to kind of taste the product because it does taste quite unique, and it's coming from those incredible dried botanicals, which are Passoret and Manuka leaf.
Yeah, I love the fact that clearly you're really into your ethically sourced plants and these, you know, sort of functional ingredients. And I think it's great that you've kind of managed to do something that's almost, it's got sort of essence of kombucha going on because of the tea. and yet you've got this kind of, the kind of sparkliness of, I can't describe any of it as well as you can, but it's fantastic. It's so unique. And your packaging is wonderful. I mean, clearly you've got that right with Three Spirit as well, but these are really lovely bottles that no one's going to be ashamed to put on their table, right? Or to take to a party.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, right? Is, you know, you want to feel like you're having something special. Quality is nothing unless it also, you know, looks good. People, and I think that's one of the first steps with good non-alcoholic drinks is people want something that can look good in a glass.
Yeah.
Makes them feel like they're being part of the party rather than excluded with a, you know, glass of Diet Coke or something.
So what do you see for the future for the brand then? Where would you like it to be sold? And I'm sure you've got a big, huge market already, but what do you see as the future for alcohol-free drinks generally and for your brands?
Well, I think it's becoming more mainstream all the time, which is fantastic. That's what everyone in the industry wants. I think that our new range, Blurred Vines, we really hope that we can, I mean, at the moment, we're so pleased. We're literally getting listings in loads of Michelin-starred restaurants, top wine bars. We couldn't ask for more, but hopefully in the years to come, that can develop into listings in more mainstream places. You know, a lot of our customers say, when will you be available in Waitrose or Ocado, et cetera? So I'm not going to lie, that is on our radar. But I think that people need to, you know, that the category needs to continue to mature, and people need to understand that really good quality non-alcoholic drinks do cost, you know, a premium.
They cost a bit more, absolutely.
And so I think that's kind of the general challenge, is we don't want to be dragged into a race to the bottom, which I think a lot of, you know, non-alc brands in supermarkets are becoming cheaper and cheaper all the time. We focus on quality. We put a lot into our bottles, into the liquid. And so, you know, I think we need to be patient and just keep doing what we're doing. But the other big things for us is, you know, we're a London-based company, but we also operate in the US. We launched in the US about 18 months ago, and it's growing fast. So that's really exciting for us. But there's so much more to do in the UK as well.
It is interesting, isn't it, how for once the UK were ahead of the States, right?
Absolutely.
Very much so.
It's brilliant.
That's great. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Steph. Sorry, Cole.
They're good at playing catch up.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
It doesn't take them long to go bigger and better in some ways than the UK.
Yeah.
But for us especially, it's cool because you're right, the non-alc trend definitely began in the UK.
Yeah.
US is catching up, but the functional trend definitely originates from the west coast of the US.
That's true.
So people understand kind of these interesting ingredients with benefits.
Yeah.
So it's a nice meeting point of two trends.
Yeah, that is good. Dash, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And do you just want to give us a website where people can find out more information?
Sure. So yeah, please visit www.threespiritdrinks.com. You can find out everything you need to know about all of our products. And hope you enjoy.
Great. Thank you. We'll pop all that in the show notes. And I think you're going to offer a competition for us at some point as well. So
correct.
Fantastic to work with you. Yes, really appreciate it, Dash. We'll let you go. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jenny.
Bye. So thank you, Dash. We'll make sure we put that link in the show notes. And we do have a competition on imperfectlynatural.com and also on thesoberclub.com to win some of the products. So make sure you have a look at that. You've got to be in it to win it, and check out this fantastic brand. As promised, I did an interview some time back with Lisa May Bennett. Enjoy. My guest is Lisa May Bennett, who has celebrated 5 years of sobriety in May and is the author of the book, My Unfurling, Emerging from the Grip of Anxiety, Self-Doubt and Drinking. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Janie. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, it's so lovely to chat to you. I mean, I just love it when people just kind of reach out because they've heard the podcast and they thought, you know what? I'd love to be on it. So well done you. It's really lovely to hear from you. So let's go back a little bit then before we get into talking about the book. Let's just go back in time. Tell us a little bit about your background and what was going on for you. You're based in the States, right?
Correct. And I grew up most of my life in Florida, and I lived with a single mom and my grandparents, and didn't have any contact with my dad at all. He's a mystery. And yeah, pretty much lived all up and down the East Coast of the US. Moved to New York City, lived there for about 7.5 years, which was a really amazing and incredible experience. I should probably write a book just about that one day. And now I've settled in the state of Maryland, and I live on a beautiful lake with my husband and my 82-year-old mom and two cats and a dog.
Tell us about your drinking years then. What was going on before you stopped drinking 5 years ago?
Sure. So when I was growing up, I was a late bloomer. I was behind all of my friends physically, and you know, I got teased and I was very self-conscious about it. I was full of self-doubt and full of anxiety too, as a child. My mother had struggled with anxiety and depression, and I felt very responsible for her well-being and emotional stability. And so when alcohol came around, when kids started drinking around the age of 16 and going to parties, it was something I really felt like I needed at the time. I was afraid to talk to boys. I was just filled with anxiety. And so I started drinking and just kept on drinking. The 4 years that I was at college, it was really like I've described it as an Olympic training ground for a lifetime of drinking. It was just, I really didn't set myself up very well for my future career, because I really wanted to be a writer. I had known since I was about 11 that I wanted to be a writer, and I majored in creative writing in college, but I was just too busy partying to write for the paper or submit to the literary magazine. So after I graduated college in Florida, I moved to New York City, and suddenly I was living in another environment where it was really easy to drink. I didn't have a car. I could take cabs and subways and buses everywhere. And so I just continued this sort of regular, I wasn't an everyday drinker, but I usually drank 3 or 4 times a week. And most of those times I drank until I was drunk. And so by the time I left New York, I was about almost 30 when I left New York. And by then drinking was pretty deeply embedded into my life and my lifestyle. And even though I had misgivings about it, it was hard to decide to quit, because I was sort of like, I think I could have gone on the way I was drinking for the rest of my life. I mean, something bad might have happened, but I wasn't at the point where I was going to get a DUI or I was going to get fired for my job. And so I just kept on going, but I couldn't get to a level. You know, we all try to moderate and we make up these crazy rules for ourselves that we can't keep. But yeah, I got to a point where I just felt really stuck.
So I guess you would say you are that classic gray area drinker. No absolute rock bottom, you know, as you say, but just continually going back down that sort of booze elevator.
Correct. And constantly in my mind thinking about it, like, okay, well, if I don't drink tonight, then I can go a little crazy tomorrow, and then I won't drink the next day. And just it eats up so much time and energy thinking about it.
Yeah. Let's just talk a little bit more about that sort of, I know you've called it self-doubt. You know, tell us a bit more about that self-doubt that you felt.
So I was always comparing myself when I was growing up to my friends. And I felt like I wasn't as pretty as them. I wasn't as comfortable talking to boys. I wasn't as charming. And it was really hard. I write a lot in my book about my sort of love-hate relationship with the media. I was a big fan of TV and movies and music and fashion magazines, and I had pictures of models all over my walls. And I just never felt like, you know, I could compare. And I had these fantasies of, oh, if only I were the cool chick, like, then everyone would like me. And it was really hard growing up feeling like that. And I think that alcohol, it's just like the teen movies that you see, like, oh, it makes you so cool, like if you're drinking at a party or at a bar. So I really leaned on alcohol to make me feel more grown up and make me feel just more cool. And then when I went into adult life and started working, I was always constantly comparing myself to the people that I worked with and thinking that I wasn't ambitious enough and I wasn't smart enough or driven enough. And it's been really tough spending decades of my life comparing myself unfavorably to other people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're a similar age to me, and I'm guessing like me, it's your only regret was you didn't do this sooner, right?
Exactly. I know. I think about, like, oh my gosh, how many books could I have written by now?
Yeah. So what happened for you then when 5 years ago it was, you know, finally time? Tell us a bit about what happened then.
Sure. So I hit 50 and I decided, I was like, wow, if I'm going to be a writer, like, now is the time. Like, if you had told me, you know, when I graduated college that I wasn't going to write a book till I was in my 50s, I would have been really sad. So I decided, okay, this is it. So I started a blog, and at first I was, you know, posting on it really regularly. And then a couple months later, I lost steam and I started thinking about it. And I just knew that something had to go if I was going to make space in my life for writing. Mm. And I knew the thing that was taking up most of the space was drinking.
Yeah.
And also watching TV, that comes in as a close second. And so I had been on the fence, I had been thinking about it. And then one night I was sitting on the couch and I was scrolling through Facebook, and a friend that I know in recovery had posted this article about drinking. And I read it and it just lit a fire under me. I like jumped up off of the couch and I announced to my husband, I'm going upstairs to work on my blog. And a couple weeks later, I made the decision to quit for good. So I was 51 years old when I did that. And I knew it was time. I knew that if I wanted to do this thing with my life, which is writing, that I was going to have to quit.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about being authentic, isn't there? And you know, as you say, for you, that catalyst was when you started writing your blog. I'm guessing there were some elements of, you know, oh, I'm not quite who I say I am here. You know, that was certainly what was going on for me towards the end of the drinking career. You know, I was kind of writing about holistic health and well-being, and there was a little voice in my head saying, you're not actually authentic with that person you're putting across here. And when you start to put the words on the page, you do have to have that level of authenticity, don't you?
Absolutely. One of the themes of my blog was like trying new things and trying to do things differently in your life. Like, okay, if my life isn't working, then I need to make a change.
Yeah.
And so I had been writing about like little changes. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, like the biggest change that I need to make is quitting drinking.
It's the elephant in the room, isn't it? It's because presumably for you, like me, it'd been, you know, those thoughts have been kicking around for years and years.
Absolutely. I had even gotten to the point where I had made up this list of questions that I was asking myself, and I would scribble them down on a piece of paper. I've never been much of a journal keeper, so I didn't have like a dedicated journal, but I had pieces of paper tucked away all over the house where I had been thinking it through.
Yeah.
And I knew what was coming.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you stop then, you know, let's talk about some of we'll talk about some of the good things, you know, some of the amazing benefits. But before we do that, because I do like to be, you know, realistic as well, and like to kind of help people realize that, you know, it really isn't a case of, okay, stop drinking and then suddenly a magic wand is waved. there's another, it's almost, you know, okay, stop drinking. What now? That's when the real work starts, right? And exactly. I know that you have spoken about your you know, the fact that you are effectively like a carer to your mother, and there'll be a lot of people listening who resonate with that. You know, tell us a bit more about that, and particularly, you know, if it is difficult for you, in what ways have you found that help you with that you know, very tricky situation?
Sure. My mom came to live with my husband and I. It's been 10 years now, and so I was still drinking when she came to live with us. And so I had that sort of, you know, little bit of release. I could have a drink. And so, but I was also trying to be really conscious of not relying on the drinking to relieve the stress of, you know, having her living with us. So yeah. even when I was still drinking, I was consciously trying to find other ways, like going to the gym to de-stress. But once I did quit drinking, yeah, I mean, there was that was completely gone, that option. And so I've had to be really conscious of setting boundaries, which is something I'm terrible at.
Well, I think you do definitely get better at that when you stop drinking, don't you? That's for sure.
Yes. Yes.
Because absolutely. It no longer feels as though you're just being sort of selfish and mean. You realize that self-care is actually very important.
It is. And I'm going through this period right now with my mom where she's having some health issues, and we've been going to see a lot of doctors, and she was in the hospital, and I have some of my own health issues going on too. And I really have to make an effort to schedule my own doctor's appointments and make sure that I'm taking care of myself and that I'm getting some time away. Like the last 2 weeks have been nothing but doctor's appointments. So I reached out and texted a neighbor like that lives down the street last night. And I said, can I just come down and talk with you for a little bit? Like, I just need to do something that's not associated with doctors and tests and procedures. So you have to remind yourself to do those things. It was, even though I knew when I quit drinking, like, okay, this is it. I'm done. But I still needed a lot of support. Five years ago, this current sort of sobriety movement that's really exploded in the last couple of years. It was starting 5 years ago, but it wasn't anywhere near what it is now. I think it's so amazing that people have so many more resources now. But there were still lots of podcasts and blogs, and I just immersed myself in them. I went to bed every night listening to a podcast, and oftentimes I would fall asleep and then wake up and go back and start it again. But I really do think you have to avail yourself of any and all resources that you can find that feel right for you, obviously.
Yeah. You mentioned, actually, I remember reading that you mentioned your intense friendships and friends that you've lost due to addiction. Tell us a bit about that.
So I grew up with a very tight-knit group of friends, and we stayed close for decades. And that's one of the adjustments that's been difficult, because my husband still drinks and all my closest friends still drink. And it's hard sometimes feeling like you're kind of left out of the fun. It doesn't make me want to drink so much as it just feels a little lonely sometimes. People definitely are in a different mind space when they're drinking, which I'm, you know, very familiar with. So that's been a challenge. And then one of my dearest friends was struggling with alcohol for quite some time. And it was really painful to see her going through it. And she was not comfortable talking about it. She was not comfortable seeking out help or support. And consequently, our friendship became pretty strained. I really tried to be there, but in the end, she wanted me to sort of play along with her, that everything else in her life was the fault and not her own behavior. And so she actually ended up dying of an overdose 2 years ago. And it was really difficult. I don't question what I decided to do towards the end, which was distancing myself from her a little bit. And she did the same, but it's really sad that, that I lost her without having, you know, some more contact in those final years.
It is really interesting, isn't it, how our relationships kind of shift and shape when we stop drinking. Do you have anything else to add around friendships? You know, I think, you know, what's quite interesting is with some of my clients, they'll admit that it's what they're most fearful of, losing good friends, or just not being seen as the person they were, before.
Well, I mean, I won't pretend like it doesn't change, because it does. And on the one hand, most of my friends live kind of far away from me, so we weren't seeing each other regularly anyway. But you get in such a habit of, when you get together, you drink. You go out to brunch and you drink. You go out to dinner and you drink. It really was a big part of our lives. And so it's been challenging. I do wonder if they lived close by, would I still be seeing them as often? And so I've had to make an effort to reach out and try to make some sober friends in the area. I mean, they don't have to be sober, but I think it does help to have some friends that understand what you're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you find that, you know, one of the things that was able to help you was that connection? Did you get the connection that you needed in those early months?
I did, to a certain degree. I think I'm still searching for it a little bit.
You got to join the sober club, Lisa.
Yeah. Okay. Definitely. As soon as we get
that was
off
a good
the
plug
call.
Slipped in there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, I think it's just really interesting, because, you know, everyone I think really desperately needs the connection in those early months, but I actually think we need it later on too. I really do, because whatever we're doing, there's always new challenges. And when you actually get that connection and support from people who have been through this hard thing, it gives it a completely different kind of layer, really. It is fascinating. Sorry I interrupted you there. But tell us the good stuff. You know, how has ditching the booze opened up your mind space? I mean, we've spoken about your creativity, which I guess you feel changed massively after you'd stopped drinking.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, it's been so amazing. So, well, first of all, just physically, I feel better. I feel so much better. And then the ability to just sort of think through creative projects, to come up with ideas, because my mind's not constantly battling over to drink or not to drink. That one huge question that was always running through my head is completely gone. And it really has left so much more space for thinking about I already have my next two books. I don't want to say planned, but I have ideas for my next two books. It's also opened up time for me to try new things. I like to try new things. I've tried like indoor rock climbing and zip lining and all kinds of fun.
Oh, wow. Isn't it amazing how it makes you adventurous? That's fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been my husband's getting a little tired of trying all these new things with me, but
yeah,
I don't make him do the ones like pole dancing. Those I do by myself, but yeah, it's been a fun experience, but you do have to figure out what you like to do because suddenly this
you got more time, right?
Yeah. This one activity that was always there, like it's always so easy just to have a beer, have a glass of wine. And so now you've got to figure out, okay, so what do I like to do? Mm. And so I've been sort of shopping around, trying to figure out what it is I like to do. Some of these things I've tried, I've only done them once and I've never done them again.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, I've been working on playing around with my habits and trying to lean, like I said, I've have this love-hate relationship with TV. I've been trying to watch less TV and it allows you, I describe it like quitting drinking for me was like opening a door that had been locked for a really long time. And when I opened the door, it opened this whole area of my psyche that had been closed off. And there were more doors there that I needed to unlock as well. But I just suddenly got access to a lot of my issues like self-doubt and anxiety. And I was able to examine them and I was able to examine my relationship with my mom and all these things I had been sweeping under the rug for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the self-doubt piece then? Because I know that one of the, reasons you reached out was because you'd heard, you know, me talking on the podcast about the power of, you know, choosing our thoughts and being able to sit with emotions. So
yeah.
Tell us a bit about that for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so amazing how thinking those same thoughts over and over again for years, they just start to come automatically. Like, oh, I guess I just have really bad luck, or oh, I guess this is just something that I can't do. And you think those thoughts so automatically that you do have to, at least initially, make an effort to consciously interrupt them.
Yeah, really notice them. Mm.
Yeah. So I've been working on that. But I've also found that through the course of trying all these new things and pushing myself and challenging myself, it ends up that's sort of an organic way of building self-confidence. And so, for example, I never in a million years thought I would take a spin class. I don't like riding bikes, like, and everything I've ever seen on TV about like what a spin class is like did not look appealing to me. But we have a fitness studio near us, and I decided they teach yoga and spin classes there. So I decided to go to an intro class and try it out. And I was terrified. And I ended up really liking it. And so just that experience of going and taking that first class and seeing that it wasn't so awful, like it helps you realize that you're capable of doing difficult things. And that builds confidence. And so like quitting drinking has given me this time and energy to do things that are helping me build confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love that. The fact that it, you know, I mean, everyone suffers from self-doubt, you know, pretty much, don't they, to a certain extent, and that lack of self-esteem. And when you sort of find that missing piece, it's amazing how you can just actually start to like yourself a bit more. And as you say, get a bit more energy to do things you probably wouldn't have dreamt of daring to try before. It really is incredible. Tell us about the book then. What do we get from the book?
Sure. So it's interesting. When I first quit drinking 5 years ago, one of the things I challenged myself to do was to take a writing course. And I took this 6-month course that the goal was at the end of the 6 months, you would have a book proposal that you could send around to agents. And I got really great feedback from the woman who taught the course. And I felt like I had produced a really good book proposal, but it was still early in my sobriety. And I didn't feel like I could go out there and sell it. I just didn't feel confident enough. So I put it on a shelf and I just went about living my life for a while. And then the pandemic hit and I wasn't working. And in September of 2020, I said to myself, well, I might not ever get this chance again. I need to start writing that book again. And I decided to write it a little bit differently than it had originally been conceived. And so I decided it was just going to be a straight up memoir. And I just sat down and started writing, and things started pouring out, and I didn't write it in any special order. But the one theme that was in my head when I started writing was this concept of unfurling, because it had occurred to me early in sobriety that I was in the kitchen one night and I was cooking and I was dancing around and I was like, wow, I'm having this unfurling. It's like I was tightly closed up for a long time and now I'm opening up. So when it came time to sort of piece together all these things I had written for my book, I saw that as this recurring theme going through the book of, you know, being in a sort of dormant period and then opening up. And so the book is, it's structured mostly chronologically. It starts in my childhood. I even go a little bit into my mom's childhood, and then I go off to school and I make my friends, and then I start having my first boyfriends, and then I start having my first job. And so it follows me mostly chronologically. But there are themes running through it of how I've had to deal with self-doubt and anxiety pretty much my whole life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love it. I love the expression unfurling. It creates this really lovely image, doesn't it? You know, of an opening and being, yeah, being open. And that's what's just, that is exactly what, you know, coming to sobriety is. And as you say, you know, emerging your strap line, emerging from the grip of anxiety, self-doubt, just wonderful. It really is that. So I'm super happy for you. Congratulations on getting the book out.
Thank you.
We'll put the link in the show notes. And I really appreciate you being my guest. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Take care.
Thanks.
So I'll put the link to the book in the show notes as well, along with the information about Blurred Vines and the link to enter the competition. Make sure you have a look at that. There's some great competitions, by the way, on imperfectlynatural.com. Our awards have just concluded recently, and lots of the brands that have worked with us on the awards are there on the on Imperfectly Natural, on our competitions page. So we're talking all aspects of holistic living. So competitions to win with leader products, you know, great skincare products, hair care products, all kinds of lovely stuff. There's some really nice organic berry powder if you want to make smoothies, all kinds of interesting stuff. So I think it's really great that when people ditch the booze, that's often the first time they've started to think about the bigger picture. Okay, maybe I will care about what I'm eating. Maybe I will have a look at what I'm putting on my skin, because God knows, why would you want toxic chemicals and alcohol, by the way, which is in a lot of skincare products? Why would you want it on your skin either? You know, there's always another way. And of course, great vitamins and supplements. I've mentioned many times that I really do believe that as when you first stop drinking and beyond, certain supplements are really key. So have a look there at imperfectlynatural.com. You'll see some of my recommendations. I don't sell anything. You don't buy them from me. I'm just recommending the ones that I think are the best. In terms of supplements, in terms of magnesium, again, you've heard me say a lot, absolutely 100%. The ones I recommend, the magnesium blend that I recommend, have made the biggest difference to me in terms of sleep and anxiety levels and all kinds of stuff. Great for anyone with pain or back pain. So you'll find all the links there. Just a very last minute mention for the Sober Coach training. You just never know who might be listening. We do technically, I think, still have a space. I think so. It's September 30th and 1st of October. Very small group Sober Coach training. It's really about the everything, the self-care, the holistic living. So we delve into all manner of amazing stuff. And those 2 days of the core modules are followed by 6-7 weeks online, where we meet and we do all the biz stuff as well. So you get a real sense of how you can put the whole pitch together, if that feels like your calling. Because again, it's amazing how many people are, you know, I spoke to someone last week, she's been sober for 3 years. And right now she's thinking, it's time. It's really time to be able to share some of this stuff and inspire other people. And the more people we have talking about
positive sobriety, not that sense of, oh, poor you, you can't drink. Oh, dear, how awful. Absolutely not. This is absolutely the positive approach. And you feel so much better when you do this, right? So just to mention for that, so drop me a message if that resonates with you, either for this course or sometime in the future. Obviously, I need to give a big up to the Sober Club. Again, it's thesoberclub.com. It is the home of positive sobriety without judgment. And our little membership group is very special, non-judgmental, very supportive. It really does keep you connected and keep you inspired. And I think that's the important piece, right? And of course, if you're very early stages, we'll help you get through it. If only I'd had something like that when I first stopped, because you feel very lonely if you try and do this on your own. And on that note, if you're just at the early stages and you're just stopping drinking, maybe this everything that's gone on has really helped bring this to a kind of a conclusion for you. Maybe you've been thinking, wow, you know, we're having another bank holiday in the UK to as a mark of respect for the Queen's funeral. And maybe you're thinking to yourself, you know, in the past, I would have used that excuse to drink. Well, make this one different. Why not? Drop me a message. Tell me you're going to do it. And I'll message you back, okay? You can always find me on social media at Janie Lee Grace. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I don't know if I say that often enough. I'm really grateful. As long as I have people listening, as long as I have amazing people to interview, I'm happy to carry on doing it. And I really appreciate all of the listeners to this podcast. And I appreciate it when you leave me a comment or a review or something like that as well. That really helps too. And just one other quick mention, for Happy Healthy Sober. I haven't given it a plug in ages, but someone was asking me the other day, okay, what are the best Quitlet books? And of course, there's a whole bunch of amazing Quitlet books that have absolutely changed my life. And I do have a recommended reading list on thesoberclub.com. So have a look at that. But don't forget mine, because it came out in lockdown. And I think it kind of did a little bit of a fizzle, because there were, you know, no, I couldn't do any events or book launches or anything like that. But nevertheless, it's a great read, though I say so myself, with some amazing contributors. It's absolutely not just me. You've got William Porter contributing and a whole host of amazing experts. So check that out as well. I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.